I am all in.
With Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Okay, hi everybody. Scott Patterson, I Am All In podcast. We are graced with the presence of one of the, the best actors working out there. He's an extremely versatile actor. Scott Cohen played Max Medina on Gilmore Girls, as you know. Listen, pal, you know I love you.
Yeah.
Okay. But I am not happy with Max Medina. It's the first time I'm watching the show. I don't know if it's me or if it's just Luke that's having this reaction, but why do you think this is bothering me so much? I mean, besides the obvious reasons.
I would say that it's Luke. I mean, you know, there was competition from the very beginning. It was like, they met us head to head before everything kind of fell apart for Max and went the way of Luke. It's to the point, it got to the point where there is, you know, team Max, team Luke, like online. I mean, you always win, obviously. But it's intense. It's like, it's a big competition for Lorelai's love.
It is.
For Lorelai's attention.
Okay. So here's the big question. I mean, not as Max, but as Scott, did you ever think that it was inappropriate to date a mom of a student?
No, I don't think so. You mean like playing the character or like...
No, as you, as Scott Cohen, do you think it's inappropriate?
Yeah, I absolutely do not think it's inappropriate. I think, you know, if you fall in love with somebody, you fall in love with somebody. It doesn't matter kind of what the situation is. I mean, you know, there are things that you have to kind of negotiate. You know, you can't... obviously, you know, you can't play favorites and, you can't exploit the relationship with a student, you know, for the mother, that's problematic, which, you know, I think they, that didn't happen, specifically, but there was there was a little bit of dealing with Rory in a way to get to Lorelai, that kind of thing, which I thought, you know, that could be a problem. But you never saw it in relationship to other students. But in reality, those are problems. But I don't think it's an issue to date the mother of a student. I think, interestingly enough, I think what happens in, you know, as a teacher, especially, I think that if you're a good teacher, you spend more time with a parent, maybe than you might in a bar somewhere or something. I mean, and you get so intimate with people. It's like doing a movie. You get so into or a TV show. You get so intimate with people. You know, those are the people that you meet. Do you know what I mean? So it's so I think it's kind of maybe a natural growth out of being a teacher.
I mean, I get it. I get the attraction.
Do you disagree completely? I could change my mind. I could change what I say.
You know, I put myself in Rory's shoes as a 16-year-old.
Okay.
And, you know, my math teacher calls and I'm falling a little bit behind and he calls my mom he calls me and he we're talking and he say, listen, you know, your outburst in class, not appropriate, but we can catch you up. And I know you were late. You missed the test, blah, blah, blah. Right. Cause that's what happened in the show. And then he says, Scott, would you mind putting your mother on the phone?
Right.
And I said, oh boy, I'm in real trouble now. So I run upstairs and I get on the other phone and I listen in and, he says, you know, what is the word you used?
Is this what actually happens in the show?
Yes. No, you left a message.
Totally forget this.
You left a voicemail on Lorelai's home answering machine.
Okay.
That said, you know, because Rory missed the test. She wasn't allowed to take the test. She flipped out in class. She got in Eliza's face. She got in Chad Michael Murray's face. And you asked her to leave, go to the library. Wait, you missed the test. You cannot take the test. You were late. We don't care about the excuses.
I vaguely remember this. Yes, yes, yes.
And then, there was that big scene in Headmaster Charleston's office where Lauren comes in and just, you know, just tears him a new one and refers to him as El Duce, and he's cool as a cucumber and just says, listen, the rules are the rules. Maybe she shouldn't be here. She doesn't have to be here. She doesn't have to go to Harvard, so on and so forth. But the rules are the rules. And so he bent a little bit and told you that she can take the test or she can do some extra credit work. And that was the message you were leaving for her. You can take some extra credit. And you said, this message is for Rory. And I talked with the dean and the headmaster, and he said, you can take some extra credit and get caught up, and we're going to get you in a place where you should be anyway. And by the way, if your mother's listening, Lorelai, I really enjoyed our encounter.
My God.
And I hope it happens again.
Okay. Well, I just thought,
wow. Wow.
Okay. So let me rephrase what I just said.
That's ballsy.
The question, wait a minute, you caught me. So the question was whether I think Scott Cohen thinks it's a problem, but obviously Max Medina was a little kind of, you know, he exploited the phone call a little bit, but he did it innocently. He you know, that was Max Medina's way. It was convenient to talk to Lorelai if he was leaving a message for Rory, but
he's busy. He didn't have time to leave a separate message.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got to leave it on there.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I get it. Yeah, sure.
I don't think it's a problem though. I mean, that's the drama of the show, really. I mean, for Max Medina, at least, I think that's part of the drama, I think that does play a part in what Lorelai's decision in the end becomes. It's, you know, this whole kind of like confluence of relationships. I mean, I don't know what was in Amy or Dan's mind, but you know, that there was those issues were prevalent for Lorelai that, you know, might have led to, you know, not being sure about what to, you know, to be with Max or not. So that maybe that was really part of the whole thing.
That's why she left Hartford. She couldn't get away with that stuff at the country club. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah, come to the small town and just sort of
corrupt
the place. There you go.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah.
With all her glory and intelligence and sparkling personality. Sure. Poor innocent Max Medina. So you're the victim. Okay. All right.
Exactly. That's the way I see it.
Scott, what's with the touching? Well, there was a lot of touching.
What?
There's a lot of touching.
This is 20 years ago, man. A different time.
For me, it's been forever. I never saw it. I wasn't even aware. But you, my friend, you know, we got to talk about the touching, because the touching, I mean, you were like, you were rubbing her elbow with your thumb.
And this is with Lorelai.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
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 This was Max Medina's charm. I mean, you know, he was in love with Lorelai. He was, you know, any way he can get close to her, he would get close to her.
Man, boy, did you ever, I mean, talk about a full court press. Nice, man. You were going to the hoop strong.
Oh my God. Yeah, I don't think you'd be allowed to do that these days.
No.
I mean, I think you would need permission to, you know, to kind of create that. But right. I think that, I mean, I do think that I don't think it was manipulation. I think that it was, you know, Max's honest feelings about Lorelai, and, you know, he really fell deeply in love with her and just really wanted to be close with her in any way that he can. And if she accepted it, then, you know, it was all good. It was not, you know, it was not an issue.
And so, she defended very well. I mean, she denied you. This is not a good idea. My daughter's, you know, she walked the high road, if you will, but man, you just, the rubbing thumb on the, I mean, you just kept going.
I said, there is no high road.
There's no high road.
What's the high road? What's the high road?
What am I talking about? High road.
No, I guess I to me it was all just about his, you know, his desire and his lust for her, and which he felt was real, it was real for him. It was totally real for him. I guess it was real for her too, until it wasn't, you know, until she felt like it wasn't. I don't even remember if there was a reason. Was there a reason that she left, or you're not even up to
that? I'm not there yet. No, I don't know. Okay. I don't know. All we're dealing with right now, I haven't moved past the touching. It's driving me crazy. Okay. It's keeping me up at night.
That was in the diner scene. In your diner.
No, it wasn't in my diner. You met her in Hartford. She was taking some classes at the local college there.
Okay.
And she said maybe we can meet for coffee at a certain place at 3 p.m. Okay, or 4 p.m. Okay. Whatever it was.
Okay. So it was
and you were rubbing her arm, and she didn't look at you when you started doing it or look down. She just sort of looked out, and I could tell she was shocked by it and that not a lot of men had been touching her in that way. And I got the feeling she kind of liked it. And then you did it again after you were telling the story of your uncle and how
you would have gotten to her much sooner in the show if you had done the same thing as me. The show would have been cut. Like, it would have been a three year show as opposed to a 7 year show.
That's why I'm so worked up about it, because why didn't I do that?
It just took you a long time.
And it was more appropriate too, because it was like, I'm not Rory. Well, I was Rory's father's figure, but I can rub a little bit. Why can't I rub?
Everyone can rub.
I see. That's what makes you Scott Cohen, because you made those choices as the character and you won her heart. And the second time you rubbed her, she looked down at your thumb and then she smiled. She liked it. She liked you.
So I got her. My favorite scene. Are you up to the where we talk at the door where I guess she writes me in? Not there yet.
Okay. We're at Cinnamon's wake where you the cat died. Babette's cat died, and you come for the date, and she's not there, and then she sees you and comes over and says, "Sorry, we got to reschedule." And then you, the master of your craft, say, maybe we shouldn't do this. I really like you, Lorelai, but I don't want to waste your time and this kind of a thing. And then you sort of walk off, and she's like, no, we can do it again. And you said, and you make the decision of like, well, okay, we can try this again. But okay, so here's the deal. So you made that choice as the actor, Scott, to have Max rubbing. Where did that come from? Did you talk about that with Lauren before, or did you just lay that on her?
No, I mean, I just did it. I mean, I think that Lauren, who I experienced as a very accepting actor, you know, I mean, if you knew your lines when you walked in and didn't really waste a lot of time, she was, you know, she allowed you to just be who you were. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that I think maybe if we kissed, I think there was maybe a conversation, but you know, not too much. And I think we were in bed once, that might've been a conversation, but this was just,
to devastating effect.
I've never been asked this question before. This is, I'm a bit stumped. I think it's just, you know, it is, for me, you know, it's interesting because the whole show that started for me, I don't know what your process was, but like when I was offered like three episodes, right? And at that time, now it's like, you know, I'm happy I would get that money at that time. It was like, that sucks. And I actually said no for a long time. Like, I didn't want to do it. I was like, I don't really want to do this. And then I saw Lauren at some kind of like publicity thing for this thing that I did. And she was just so fantastic and fun. And I was like, you know what? I think this could be really fun to do. And so I took it, and there was such like a welcoming kind of sensibility from Amy and Lauren to when I got on set that it allowed me just to really be free and not feel kind of burdened by any kind of what I'm supposed to do, or and so it, I just feel free. And I have to say, I mean, I don't think I feel that way. You know, it's not something that not that particular thing, but you know, feeling that kind of freedom on a set doesn't come, you know, every day. So you know, that's one of the reasons I remember it as such a lovely experience. And, right. Besides the fandom of it all, and being recognized for it, like just, you know, and 20, this is what it's, 20 years later,
right.
21 years. It's crazy, man. It's right. Like, anyway,
you want me to read you? I'm going to read you the voicemail. I'm going to take you back. Here we go. This is the voicemail you left in episode 4, The Deer Hunters. On Lorelai's answering machine. Hi, this is a message for Rory. It's Max Medina calling. I just wanted to say that I talked to Headmaster Charleston, or Il Duce, as he is more affectionately known at the Gilmore household, and he's agreed to let you do some extra credit work to make up for the missed test today. Now, I'm not sure what extra credit work it is going to be, but it probably will be time consuming and extremely painful. It will, however, such a sadist. It's just unbelievable. It will, however, get you back to where I think you rightfully belong. Rory, don't lose heart. Make this work. And if your mother is listening, Lorelai, it was a pleasure encountering you. I hope it happens again. Anyway, see you in class. Bye.
That's I think that's brilliant writing. So what to me, that's really about, Max is able, Max knows Lorelai's, like he got a glimpse of who she was, and one, that she probably would be on the phone, right? Listening and on this, you know, and two, or listening to the recording. And that he knew that, that the fun of meeting her was going, like it was going to go someplace. And so to me, that's actually a really innocent kind of, you know, I mean, for lack of a better word, charming kind of conversation, but it's mainly focused on Rory. I also think that Max Medina would have been, and I actually don't know, maybe this did happen, but I think he would have been quick to quit that job. If Rory needed him to be separate from their life, I think that he would have found someplace else to go. I think Lorelai was much more important than his work.
Extremely honorable statement. Boy, does that, wow. Okay. That almost stops the train dead in its tracks there. Wow. You're good. You're good, Scott Cohen. You're good. because man, that one move. And even back then, I'm not just saying because of today, how things are, but even back then, I mean, did you ever consider when reading it and rehearsing it and doing it that, my God, I am placing Chilton in legal hot water. I am placing Rory in a very precarious position with her classmates who are already showing aggression toward her. You know, as the new kid, as, you know, somebody who's attractive and super intelligent. And, I mean, you noticed that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Max Medina, you know, if there's a flaw to his character, it was that Lorelai really was, she took precedence. So it wasn't, I don't think he did think about those things. I think he did think about them slightly, like don't go this far. But, I don't think it was at the forefront of his mind. I think at the forefront of his mind was that he met this woman that he was really falling in love with and just that, and wanted to be with her.
You know, I think the reason I'm having such a visceral reaction to all this is because I've never seen it before, and I never realized that Amy threw so many serious contenders into the ring with her, and that she was deeply considering. And you know, just from what I've been hearing about the lifeline of your relationship on the show with her, is that it was very serious. And you know, I just never realized that it was so real, and it was so real for her and for her character, and that you guys, you know, were just about together. I mean, you were, it was happening. And I remember reading all the scripts and I knew it. But seeing it is a different experience. It's a very powerful experience for me because of, you know, all these feelings are coming up, all these sort of, you know, I was getting a little jealous.
But do you feel, I'm just curious, do you feel like that at the end of, like you end up with her in the end, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you feel like that you're as Luke, that your worthiness of Luke, that it went through this kind of,
right.
You know, this crucible of other men, and, you know, that you ended up, you know, that you were successful in the end? I mean,
you know, you're probably, that's a really good question. And nobody's ever asked me that question before. Not that this is about me, it's about you, but you asked me the question, so I'm gonna consider it. Maybe there was something in him that she was too classy, too educated, too smart for him, too on top of everything, that he would never have a chance. He's just a small town guy. And he doesn't have big aspirations. You know, he's not. And yeah, I think there was some insecurity there, some deep insecurity that he couldn't handle or make happy a woman who was so obviously spectacular. She was just a bright light in that town. Not that, you know, that there weren't other bright lights in that town, but she was like, really, like, you put her anywhere and it's like, wow.
That's so interesting. You know, it's like, it's really a credit. I mean, I'm not really sure, but I'm pretty sure like, that Amy left after six seasons or something like that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the last season.
Yes.
Right. But I mean, I would imagine, you know, that the development of character over 7 years of the entire time, it's such a credit to them, Amy and Dan, to kind of reach a point of, you know, that there was great humility in the idea of small town love, that there was this really, I mean, and you see that throughout the entire show, like small town really created,
right.
You know, such camaraderie and community and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, that small town love wins in the end because it really is an emblem of what real love can and should be.
Right.
It's not something, you know, you don't need to be, you know, it everything kind of falls to the wayside, whether it's being, you know, fancy and elegant and intellectual, or, you know, what really matters is that you have feelings for somebody, mm-hmm. and that sharing is of the utmost importance, which is, I mean, it's pretty interesting that Amy and Dan, I mean, they're so good at it.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, now that I think about it, another element is, he probably was Luke was probably protecting himself against any potential breakup. And he, I don't know if you've ever been in a situation when you're younger. I've been in a couple of those where it's like, I don't know if I could handle losing her. So yeah, I don't really want to be terribly aggressive.
Yeah,
I deserve her anyway. And she's going to dump me. She's going to find me out, and then I'll be just a wreck, you know?
Right.
So there's that.
Right.
So interesting perspective. Very interesting. Very interesting. But the touching. Oh, I watched it over and over again. I was up late at night.
Like, I wonder if there must be a GIF out there about of me touching her. I'm sure there is.
I was learning.
And if not, I'm sure there will be now.
I tried it on my wife, and she hit my hand away. She goes, "What are you doing?
Get off of me!"
I said, "I'm Max Medina, and you, isn't it working?"
I'm Scott Cohen-ing you.
I'm Scott. Yes. Okay, so you weren't given any direction for the touching.
Oh, yeah, sure, of course. Oh, no, not the touching.
That was you.
I think so. I think, yeah, yeah.
The
I mean, I might have been given. I don't really remember a lot of direction ever.
Right.
But I'm sure Amy directed a lot.
Yeah.
Not everybody directed. The only other person I really remember directing is Michael Cattleman, unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
Who I worked with. Not too long ago, who I loved,
yeah.
But no, I don't think so.
Well, not to get too actory here, but the reason I'm focused in on the touching is it you know, Anton Chekhov talks a lot about the psychological, or I'm sorry, Michael Chekhov, the great teacher, the cousin or the nephew of Anton, talks a lot about the psychological gesture and how you should trust it. And that, to me, that is the manifestation of the psychological gesture. That is the perfect psychological gesture, which is what makes you Scott Cohen, which is why you get the jobs, you know, with all of the big people and the big movies, and because you trust that, you go with that. So maybe there's a little actor jealousy, like, damn it, that guy's good, you know, to do that, because that's a detail, you know, that's one of those details that riles people up, but it enhances a scene and it says so much without, you know, you having to say anything. You just rubbing that elbow, you just rub it.
Well, Scott, I have to say, I am so flattered that you say this, and I'm really not joking, because, you know, you go through life never really knowing what your uniqueness possibly is. I mean, as actors, you know, we really just go from job to job, audition to audition. And, you know, you work hard, and most of the time it's working by yourself, because, you know, you're either, you know, on tape, or you're, you know, even when you're shooting a TV show or a movie, you rarely get like Gilmore Girls. You rarely get that moment where you really understand how to, you know, that you're, you know, interacting with somebody. I thank you for that, because that really means a lot that someone else is seeing something that's kind of unique to me, and that it just means a lot. So thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, it's a bold choice. It's something that just happened in your research and in the scene with Lauren. And, you know, a lot of actors wouldn't have gone for it. They would have thought about it maybe, but they wouldn't have done it, or they would have asked permission, and then it would have become sort of awkward and not organic. You know what I mean? So it's, I mean, you just did it. It was just so. So let me ask you this.
Yep.
I'm only 5 episodes in. What should I prepare for here? Am I going to lose my mind?
I don't know. I've only seen a couple of scenes from all the episodes. I don't think I watched after I was in it, really. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the big scene at the end of his, you know, where he asks her to marry her, and it's, I think the show is called 1,000 Daisies or something like that, and he buys her all these daisies, and she's like in this, and I think she accepts in that, and then I don't even remember how she doesn't marry me. I don't know if there was a wedding. I don't think there was a wedding. And she doesn't come. I forget exactly how that turned out.
Well, we're gonna.
And then I remember. That. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. And then I remember. I remember over the years, you know, over those few years, talking to Dan and Amy. You know, they were going to bring me back, and then that never happened. And then yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. And you're in New York right now, right? You.
I'm in upstate New York.
Oh, you are. Oh, and you've been there since. The pandemic started, maybe, or
I got actually in just as the pandemic was starting, I got rid of my apartment in New York.
Oh, really?
Mainly because we were not spending that much time there, and we didn't want to really pay for it anymore, so we gave it up. But then and at the same time the pandemic hit, so it was like kind of normal that we wouldn't be there,
right?
And, you know, now if I work there, it's a bit of an issue. Like, I have to find a place to stay usually, but it's, but I'm up here in the country, and it's fantastic, and I love it.
Right. There's a lot to be said. I sold my house in LA too, and we went out a little bit to the country. I wouldn't say country, but we.
Of California?
Yeah. Cool. We didn't make it out of California, but, we still may.
Aren't you? You're from back east, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm from Philadelphia. I was born in Philadelphia,
right.
Grew up in South Jersey. Yeah. And I spent, you know, a lot of my summers in New York City because my sister was living with somebody there and married to somebody there. So we would go up every summer. I'd go up every summer in high school and just spend the summer up there with her. Let's get back to this this role that you played that has had this sort of this nuclear bomb in my life. So when you first got the script, did you have any kind of misgivings? And you may have addressed this already about a teacher dating a mom. Did you have any kind of thoughts you could put Chilton in jeopardy? Did you have any kind of thoughts about what this could do to Rory? You know, because that's the thing that I'm responding to.
Yeah, so. You're responding to. Yeah. Unfortunately, not. I mean, when I got the script, all I really saw was the romance. That's what I really saw. I mean, maybe I should have seen more of the Chilton thing. Maybe that would have been a little bit more kind of. But you know, there were never any scenes between me and the headmaster except in that in the office. And I think if they were if they had written scenes for me.
Right.
To take me out of the relationship and put me in the school more, you know, to deal with that, like a friend that you're talking to that's like, don't do this.
Right.
Then I think I would have thought about it a little bit more. But there was nothing in the script that was telling me to do anything other than what the romance was dictating.
Mm-hmm. I love the fact that ultimately what we discussed today was your love of her, and it was a romantic ideal. It was the one. She was the one. And you came on here, brave soul that you are. And, you know, you truly were a rival. You were a real rival. I mean, this was serious. But
that was never talked about. That was never talked about. It wasn't talked about like I was a rival, or that was never in any direction. It was never any, like the writer, you know, Amy never, at least with me, she might have talked about it with the writers. Like there might have been like, this is the rivalry. We're going to set this up, but never as a direction. Like this is an issue. I mean, did we go head to head yet?
I that scene just popped into my head where we're standing in her foyer. And we are going head to head.
Yeah. But isn't that just one scene? I think we just had that one scene.
I think that was
you know, so. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the only time we really, you know, and I'm curious, I wonder if there was any kind of dialogue that was about Luke, you know, I don't think so, but I don't remember. Anyway, that was set up by writing, not necessarily by, you know, performance, I think.
Right.
Which is better because then I'm not thinking about the competition. I'm thinking about just Lorelai. I'm just thinking about like, that's the goal. The goal is Lorelai. The competition plays out in the writing of it, not in the, you know, if you're constantly playing like the jealousy, then you're not really playing the romance, which ends up being what people, I think, become attracted to.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Cause I think in the foyer scene, I was playing fear and insecurity and really being threatened. I mean, I really sensed that this was going to go bad for me and that I was going to lose her. So I do remember that. But of course you cover and you try to be the tough guy. And she's mine and this is what I do for her and you can't her. I mean it was schoolyard childish stuff, but it's there we are.
Yeah, there we are. Exactly. There we are.
I want to do a little thing called rapid fire. You ready for this?
All right.
All right, here we go. I know. Yeah. How do you take your coffee?
With cream.
Can you smell snow?
Yeah.
Are you Team Logan? Sure. Because you're from the Northeast, I can smell snow.
Yeah, no, so you can totally smell snow, man. You smell snow in the air, you smell snow on the ground.
Yeah.
you know, pee in the snow, you smell pee in the snow.
There you go. Are you Team Logan, Team Jess, or Team Dean? You don't give a crap, do you?
I'm not even Logan. I'm not sure who Logan is. Jess, I think Jess was Milo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say Team Dean.
Okay. Why?
Because I really got along with, we were early on when that was like his first thing, right?
Yeah.
That's Jared Padalecki.
He's 18 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of fun talking to him back, and it was, he was just starting and we formed a little bond for a little bit. And then, he became, he went on to both of them, superstars.
Yeah. He was a sweet kid. He was a very sweet kid. Who's the daddy? Wow, I'm asking these questions.
You're asking me questions. I don't even know what they're in actually reference to.
Who's
Rory's daddy? Yeah.
Who's the daddy?
I don't know.
Do you care?
Not really.
I gotta ask a question.
I want to hear Melissa McCarthy when she's on.
What's your best memory of Gilmore Girls?
My best memory of Gilmore Girls has nothing to do with the show. Mm-hmm. It has to do with shooting on 9/11 and how they Pamela, the line producer, I forget her last name now. You know, 9/11 happened. I was in LA shooting, and my family, my wife and my kid were in New York, and we lived in Soho at the time, which was very close. And he had gone to school that day, and I saw the towers fall on the news, and went to the studio that morning, right? That I was working that day. Everything shut down, obviously, but, they put me in a room. They were so concerned with me getting in touch with my family. And they put me in a room for 12 hours. They patched me through all these ways of trying to get to my wife's cell phone. And,
Scott. It was
like totally being taken care of in a time when you feel like just you're the ground under your feet is just kind of taken.
And how long did it take you to get in touch with your wife?
12 hours.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was just
incredible. That's... and I'll never forget it. And it was, I just felt like it was so, it was just so unbelievable. They just, it had nothing to do with the show. But then I think the next day we shot, or 2 days later we shot. I remember shooting a scene with Lauren in a car. It was like a driving scene or something like that. And I it was just crazy. I mean, I was kind of laughing the whole time and not really like, and that was the other thing. They got me out as quickly as possible. They like got me out on the first flight when flight started going back. And I remember 9/11 was on a Tuesday and they flew me on a Saturday morning. It was like one of the first flights that went out of LA.
Yeah.
So it was,
what a terrible experience. Good God. 12 hours of agony. Wow.
Yeah. But that's my best memory because other than that, my best memories are just the whole thing with Lauren and just having such a good time, and with Amy and Dan, and never feeling threatened that the way I was doing things was questioned. Mm-hmm. It was just always, it was always good. And I don't really remember, maybe because I was so, busy at the time. I don't ever remember feeling like I needed, to know if he's coming back or, what's happening to Max or, it was what it was. I think, that's basically it.
The show that you're binge watching right now.
I just finished The Kominsky Method.
Ah, okay. Cast member you texted most recently.
On The Gilmore Girls?
Yeah.
I'm in touch with Amy and Dan.
Okay. Okay.
A lot.
Okay. So have you done an episode of Maisel?
I was on this season.
Right. Okay, cool. So here's a Lauren question. Okay. Did you know that the two of you had a great scene partner in each other because it was so, what's the word, ping-pongy, quick, back and forth? I mean, did you know pretty quickly that you were in really good hands with a...
Yes, yes. I knew Lauren before the show, right? We were actually in, I did a three episode arc on Law and Order, like in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And I played a film director that murders his wife, cuts her up into little pieces. And she was in the same show.
I think that's funny. It's because you were playing.
Yeah, it was I touched her a lot before I stopped killing her. I tried to get close. She wouldn't let me. And she was on the show. I forget exactly why she was on the show, but she was on the show. And my agent was like, oh, you know, it'd be great. You guys should work together and, it'd be fun. And then we met each other and, you know, she was great. And this came up and, I knew that she was just totally special and extremely talented. I don't think that I was anywhere near, I mean, I don't know if you had this experience, but I wasn't anywhere near as being able to speak as quickly as, and that was actually, I was lucky that Amy, and maybe this was because it was kind of, first Amy's, you know, she wasn't like as intense about, dialogue early, maybe, I don't know, but my take on how to do that dialogue was not like, you know, like rapid fire. Mm-hmm. I needed to be able to have some kind of like, you know, ground to it.
Right.
Whereas Lauren could memorize these lines. I mean, there was 90 pages per script. You know, she memorized these monologues that, you know, like it was unbelievable how quick she could kind of like lay stuff out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was totally, I felt like she, you know, it was a great scene partner and she really was, again, she was very giving and very free about what I, you know, if I wanted to try something, she would go for it and that, you know, wouldn't be a problem. You know, she wasn't judgy or anything like that, which always makes it easier because, you know, you work with people that are very judgmental and you're like, oh my God, it's like I'm completely stuck.
It's going to be a long day. Yeah,
it's going to be a long day. Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, so you have to like, so she was great. I mean, she was, you know, a true champion of, you know, of doing work. I never saw her complain about anything.
Right.
I wasn't part of, you know, if that was happening, I didn't know about it. She was always like right on her stuff and willing to be a great scene partner. And she was, really a great scene partner.
You know, one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in my entire career was when, we were there at 3 a.m. doing a diner scene. It was just the two of us. And she had this big entrance monologue coming into the diner and a huff and the whole thing. And I mean, it was like, it was that much black ink. It was like the whole page and she had to spit it out fast. And not only did she have to do that at 3 a.m. after, you know, a monster day of 20 hours or something like that, of working and, you know, 90 cups of coffee we both had in us, Brian De Palma had been there since the afternoon and he stayed. He was a fan of the show. His daughter loved the show. Oh. And Galen Hurd, the mother, the wife, was there as well. I think she was there, but Brian De Palma was sitting right next to camera.
Oh my God.
Okay. You know how we do our coverage for close-ups.
Yeah,
he was like,
totally. Yeah.
Camera's the microphone. He was there. Brian De Palma.
That's insane.
On her coverage, okay, on her coverage, and she was flawless. She didn't flinch. I mean, you talk about being under pressure with like a major director staring you right in the face the entire monologue, and just she did it twice, nailed it. We moved on.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
She's so professional.
Yeah.
So, you know, and yeah, really professional.
Yeah, it was cool.
And I think that she, you know, she must have felt, I mean, I don't really talk to Lauren, but you know, she must have felt, you know, it's just interesting, like, you know, somebody that, you know, is so successful on a show, for so long, you know, she really seemed to deal with it really well. I mean, from my perspective, and not ever make it like she's a star or, you know, she was very humble and, you know, I found it incredible.
Found incredible is if I were in that position and I were the lead of the show and I was carrying a show like that with so much dialogue and so many hours you had to put in every day. And I wasn't getting and doing the level of work that she was doing day after day, month after month, year after year, season after season, and not really, I mean, getting recognized or getting nominated at the rate which she deserved. Kind of amazing that it went on for 7 years because, right. I mean, we were obligated to six. We did a seventh. But it's like, how long can you go? I mean, like, what's the point after a while? I mean, not that you're doing it to be recognized, but it's like, you know, it starts feeling, you know, it starts feeling bad. Like, come on, you know, maybe, you know, throw us a Golden Satellite Award or something. I mean, I something. But it was just odd. It just sort of, I don't know, there was this sort of sour taste after a while on set. Like, we can do, you know, what we consider to be very high-level work with very high-level writing, and nobody at these academies cares. And it's not going to make any difference. Not that you do it to win the awards or get nominated, but you want to be invited to the party a little bit, right?
Yeah, you want to be invited to the party, totally. But you know what? After so many years in this business, I do feel like that, you know, because I too want to be, you know, invited to the party. But I feel like that there are, you know, there are things that happen that never get recognized, that never get, you know, see the light of day in terms of, you know, people kind of giving it the credit it deserves. And unfortunately, it's for a lot of actors and a lot of shows, a lot of movies that don't get that because there are darlings that, you know, that get chosen, you know. And unfortunately, and I don't mean to like trash, you know, any organization, but, you know, whether it's the Academy or whether it's the Emmys or whether it's, you know, SAG, we all know how things get voted. And, you know, it's not rocket science. It's, right. You know, people choose. Yeah. People don't necessarily choose what's deserving 1 year. They choose, you know, what they know. And, right. It's not always, you know, the case with one particular show. She absolutely deserved an enormous amount of attention for that, for that character.
Absolutely. So many others.
No, the girl from Mrs. Maisel, who you know, who's getting an enormous amount of attention.
Oh, right.
So, which is a similar character. It's a similar character.
Listen, buddy, we know you got to go. You're a busy guy. Thank you for your time. This was amazing.
So much fun.
It was
so
great.
Much fun.
It was great spending time with you. And I think I'm going to send you some coffee. I have my own coffee company. Do you drink coffee?
Do you really?
I do. Yeah.
Send it to me. Definitely.
Okay. All right. They'll get
They'll
get your info and all that. But it was amazing talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
You're
welcome. I'd love to have you back.
You're welcome. It's great seeing you. Great talking to you.
And I am so glad that you explained to me that it was really just romance. It was just romantic love, and it took precedent over anything. And how honorable of you to say, I'm going to step away from Chilton. If it comes to that for this woman, that's the true rival. On guard, my friend.
On guard.
We will meet again.
I hope so.
Anyway, stay well, stay safe. All the best, buddy. Take care.
All right. Talk
all right,
to
man.
You soon.
Thanks.
All right, bye.
Don't forget, follow us on Instagram at IAmAllInPodcast and email us at Gilmore@iHeartRadio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, ScottyP.com, ScottyP.com, ScottyP.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.